Which is the most effective?
Running a direct concept or wasting and so forth? Come on, which is? Concept was more effective than wasting it on a fly.
They do different things.
They both do different things. What did it do to you?
Concept was very effective until I ran out of something.
Something. Oh. All right. Come on, which do you find the most effective? Now, let's make up your mind.
Well, the first part made me go down lower because I
was not
on the out.
It did, huh?
No, I mean, that's been more effective.
Well, now that's a nice, refined, narrow use of it. Did you feel better when you wasted them? Well, that you will find to be the case. And that's why I ran you on a concept first. But I evidently didn't make my point too well. Do you feel better now?
Yes.
Did you feel better when you finished running those concepts?
Yes.
You still felt better. Well, it's stuff pretty hard to make it unworkable. What the living truth of the matter is most of your pre-clears that come up won't be able to get even a concept of something except in a symbolical form until they've wasted it. Wasting better is a case, and running the concepts has a tendency to bog it, you'll find by experience. Don't evaluate a technique by how deeply it plugs your pre-clear out, since you'll just eventually just run out of havingness, you know? You'll just run out of havingness, and then we won't know quite what we're doing, one way or the other. But wasting, saving, and so forth is better on me. All right, what'd you get on symbols? You find out anything about yourself? Yes.
I did. I found I'd been doing it all my life.
Doing what?
The racket you were running, I suddenly discovered that that's been the method. I've been doing resisting this, resisting that,
yeah.
Pushing through.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that people have been doing it to me all my life,
that's
and
right.
I haven't known it.
That's right. Well, I tell you, it's a remarkable thing, but people talk a lot about, well, if other people didn't mess me up and so forth, why, I'd get along all right. And the truth of the matter is, they're really not very dangerous to each other. They're really not. As people, they're dangerous to each other, but you're not people. You get what I mean? It's a little abstruse, maybe, but you get what I mean? It's a little abstruse. I'm not insulting your intelligence. I mean, it's just there is a point there. If our purpose is to preserve a bunch of bodies, and if we're sort of here on a mission of putting them all on ice, well, yeah, people can be very harmful to people. See that? But if we're here for the business of livingness, which is not necessarily the business of preserving a body at all. Let me assure you that there's something very dramatic in throwing one away with great elan. we find out that people are very far from dangerous to people, but are necessary to complete livingness. And so we get pulled between these two things, life's insistence upon survive and preserve and repair and patch up, and the static, a thetan's, desire to live. And an individual is caught between these two points. Of course, you've caught in lots of points, but the main thing of it is, gee, he'd sure like to live, and golly, he sure has to preserve this body. Well, now when they start resisting, they get worried about preserving. And that is about the only big major trap there is. It's resistance. You can get somebody to resist something, why, you'll just fix him all up. There's no truer truism that which you resist, you become. All right, now what's the symbol? Oh, that's very close. That's very close. Yeah, that's an ideal. That's not a symbol. That's all right. That's one of its variable meanings. I mean, well, look, we have a lot of divergent ideas on what a symbol is. It happens that for our purposes in Scientology, this thing called a symbol can be given a finite definition which will clarify a great deal of the work we are doing. It's a very precise definition. Very, very, very precise. That is, a symbol is an idea which is fixed in energy, which is mobile. Which is mobile. From anyone? Oh, the difference between a symbol and a postulate. Ah, yes. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. A symbol is a postulate which has already been fixed. A postulate is something which an individual makes. When he has made a postulate, he thereafter may fix it in a mass and give it mobility.
A symbol be a way of describing automaticity
to a postulate. Yes, that's where we're going. You're a very, very bright girl this morning. Did the processing do it or a night's sleep? Why were you in apathy?
I don't know. Are you on? There's your answer.
All right. Now let's take a look.
I'm the auditor, Ron. She's a very good auditor.
I would never have thought of it unless you mentioned it there. Who is the auditor? Let's chastise her.
She did a good job.
All right. Now let's take a look at this thing called a symbol. And let's look at that definition. And now let's take another definition. Let's take the definition of work in physics. We all know what work is, don't we? But in physics, work is a very finite definition. Now, when you say work in the science of physics, you mean foot pounds of energy. You mean distance, mass, gravity factor. You're talking about something terrifically finite. You understand that? So let's understand right here the difference between a type of definition which amounts to a law and a definition out of a dictionary on a word. You see, they can vary slightly. Now, if we take this thing called symbol and we give it the definition we have just given it, and if we use that definition, we are thereafter able to understand and codify a great deal of livingness and see what is taking place in this livingness. It broadens somewhat the definition of symbol. A postulate is something that you can give or take or pull or hand out or do almost anything with. But when you make a postulate into a symbol, you have surrounded the symbol with mass, energy, of one kind or another, and you have granted it mobility. You have fixed it in energy and granted it a mobility. It's a neat trick, isn't it? Now let's take a symbol, the letter A, the article A in the English language, and you see that the moment we put it into the airwaves, we have given it some mass and handed it some mobility. Well, this makes it very difficult to locate. Theta, according to the pre-logics, creates space and time and energy in which to locate things. It is very happy when it is fixing things accurately in space, and your pre-clear will get as well as he can fix things accurately in time and in space, and he's very happy about that, you see. Now, Let's take this thing he does with this thing we call a symbol. Ha ha, boy. Ha. Isn't that a wonderful thing? We wrap it up in energy, and then we give it mobility, and after that it's lost, but it's still there. So it compounds into invisible barriers and into the most confounding and incomprehensible of puzzles. Take the letter A in the English language. Let's garb it in printer's ink. Put it in a book. And then the book moves out of the library onto laps and back onto shelves and back onto laps. And here it goes. And it's got this letter A, this article A in it. It's a symbol and it just keeps on moving. And you never get track of it afterwards. The only thing which can pierce 16-inch armor plate is a symbol. A bullet is not, accurately speaking, a symbol. All a bullet is some mass. Now, it can be mass with meaning. It could be a silver bullet. But just a bullet is just a mass. You could set it up and say, now this is a symbol of war, and discuss it and give meaning to it. As long as you use it actively and expend it, create it and expend it and locate it and fix it, it's not a symbol. It's just mass. See, that's a piece of energy. But now let's take the letter A and put it in printer's ink. All right, now let's take another symbol. We'll call it police. It's a weird, isn't it? All it is, word. All right, we take this word and we garb it in energy. We give it an ideal and we make it mobile and we get it lost and then we don't know where it is. And the next thing you know, it's after us. You see that about police? No. Let's take somebody who's present here. This person has been trained in judo. He is really an expert in judo. He is very good with a Colt pistol. Extremely good with a Colt pistol. His alertness is good and his reaction time is much better than normal. All right. Will you please tell me why this person should be afraid of a police officer? A police officer is seldom a good shot. Is poorly, if at all, trained in judo, and has reaction time which is mostly fat. And yet if a police officer to walk in the door and say, come down with me to the jail and lose 2 days, this fellow would probably go along with him. Why? Why? That's nonsensical. Well, it's because the individual here has a symbol called police. Now let's suppose this individual didn't have this word called police and didn't know the meaning of police and had no further significance to police, and some character in a uniform walked in the door and flourished a gun on him. They just bury the guy that walked in at the door, that's all. You see that? Life would be awfully simple, wouldn't it, if we didn't have a symbol? It'd be simple, direct, and without a long time lag. Because the only real trouble with the police is if he killed this fellow, then some more police would come tomorrow, he thinks, according to the symbol. Actually, they might not. They might say, well, we better not arrest that fellow. You see whither we are going with this thing called symbol. It's an embracive idea, and it gets fixed in mass. And because it's mass, and because the Thetan is often hungry for energy, he will pick up one of these things. And because he objects to their confounded mobility, he will try to hold one still. And after that, having resisted it, he will become it. A body could be said to be a symbol. It's mobile. It's an idea. It's fixed in mass. And we find, strangely enough, that a Thetan who believes he's a body has already adopted a great number of ethics, ideals, and otherwise, and fixations and arbitraries. And when we start to process him, we exteriorize him, And he says, I'm not a body. And what do you know? You shed at that moment an enormous number of the arbitraries which have been holding him into a persistence in life and denying him livingness. He hasn't any action or anything else as long as this takes place. He's fluidity. So the effort of the individual to fix and unfix ideas in matter, in energy, shows up immediately and intimately on the business of the symbol. Right? So these damn things float around and people try to nail them down. A bibliophile is actually trying to nail down a bunch of symbols. He thinks they're valuable and desirable. He didn't start that way. That which a person resists, he will eventually find very valuable and very necessary. He wants it. He knows he wants it. Symbols. That's a fantastic thing. If an entity shows up or something like that, you're exteriorized someplace and you all of a sudden see this character. And by the way, I don't know that a Thetan is the only livingness. I just happen to know that you're a Thetan. But I also don't know that there's such a thing as an evil demon that exceeds the value and power of a Thetan. And as a matter of fact, I know quite the contrary. Those things which show up in that form succumb with such speed that they appear to be more symbols than anything else. All right, yes.
Could you say a symbol was an enforced idea of a selective mass?
No. No. You've already limited it. It might be an invited idea. It might be a very pleasant idea. It might be a hidden idea. Don't add intention to the symbol. Intention is entirely separate from this definition. There's symbols. And men can add all sorts of intentions to all kinds of symbols. Let's take the symbol called freedom. Let's print it up on a poster. That puts it in mass. And then the poster can appear almost any place. And then somebody comes along, some politician, and starts screaming freedom. But what's this politician want to do? He wants to do some slavery. So what's his intention with regard to the symbol? The symbol is a weak and willless thing, which is a tool in the hands of anyone, and depends for its existence, as do all things, except the static itself, on agreement. And when you have grasped this principle entirely and completely, you will understand not only what an engram is, what an aberration is, and what your preclear is frantic about. A Thetan fixes and unfixes ideas in energy. When he builds something, he fixes it in energy. Rather simple, isn't it? When he takes something down, he unfixes an idea out of energy. Now he's got all these floating ideas in energy. They're mobile. They go all around. He can't locate them. They're here today and gone tomorrow. Will-o'-the-wisp. It's a Fabian warfare he fights. So he gets a passion for having everything nailed down. And this passion sticks him on the time track, fixes him in energy masses such as engrams, gives him automaticities, makes him do all the damnedest, foolish things that you can think of. A symbol has a greater liability than it has a value. But it has a great value. If we continued to talk or converse directly as a fluid flow of ideas, our beingness would at once be very perceivable. But by avoiding, by hiding, we can put our ideas into symbols and then transmit them. And the symbols so transmitted then do not disclose what we may wish to hold back as our basic intention. And so we get everybody looking through the symbol to find the meaning behind it. And this is a constant dramatization on the part of the Thetan. He looks through the symbol to find what's behind it. In such words to him are invisible barriers. They're barriers because they're made out of mass. They actually have mass. You can cut some out of a book sometime and weigh them if you want to. Spoken words actually have mass. You can put up a Kinnick photometer and talk at its gas flame, and you will see immediately that something is vibrating that gas flame. Something which is not just wind, but a vibration is activating the particles of air. And so we have a fluid flow of ideas which are yet floating along in an energy mass. Now we start to process an engram out of somebody, and we find out that we're running one of the most complex symbols you ever looked at. It's got Lord knows how many perceptics in it, and it's got all kinds of things. A wonderful gimmick, an engram. Now you start to process this engram today, and you think you'll finish it off tomorrow, but it's gone, and then it recurs 6 months from now. In other words, it has mobility. When you are pursuing exclusively the course of searching for and eradicating the symbol, you are just dramatizing whole track. Because the Thetan has really never done anything else in terms of worry or anxiety or upset and so forth. As long as he can get in there and shoot, he's all right. As long as he can get in there and build a house, tear it down, he's all right. As long as he can put up a great big beautiful mock-up that's just pretty, or blowing up, he's all right. As long as he can engage in a game which has an actual finite football and chase that football up and down the field, knock people flat, and do all sorts of things, he's all right. But the second he begins this endless task, this endless chase of the symbol, the findingness of the hidden meaningness behind thee, he's a lost dog, because the symbol is lost. And so the Thetan who tries to locate them himself gets lost. And the lost feeling which an individual has is the pursuit of the symbol, not the pursuit of a great big oak tree. Not the pursuit of this, and not the pursuit of finite things, solid things, and not even the pursuit of thought. Thought itself is not necessarily a flock of symbols. Now, you understand that. Thoughts, postulates. Now, a Thetan in his ideal state can make a postulate and make it stick and make it act. And take it up and throw it out. Now, he can, in his ideal state, make a symbol and tear one up. He can explode one that comes into him. He can blow it. He can release it. He can change his mind. But once he has become so engrossed in the search for the meaning behind symbols that he has accumulated Lord knows how many in packed masses, when he is no longer able to face up to them, when he believes that symbols are more powerful than he, the creator of symbols, you see, is now being bludgeoned by the symbols. That's an engram and restimulation. The creator of engrams, you might say, suddenly finds himself being hit by engrams, he believes that he himself must be of a lower order of symbol. So therefore, he must have mass. So therefore, he can't make postulates. So therefore, he can't undo postulates. So therefore, when he makes up his mind wrongly, it stays made up wrongly. Why? Well, because he can't undo this. And so out of fixing and unfixing ideas and the floating and mobile character of symbols, we actually get the mechanical side of sanity and aberration. We also get the mechanical side of exteriorization. The deeper an individual gets into symbols, the harder he is to exteriorize, because he believes he's a symbol. He thinks he has mass. Of course, if he thinks he has mass, why, he holds the mass that he thinks he is in close to him, and it doubled terminals on him, it matched terminals on him, and he starts to get out of the body, and he can't impose space between two terminals adequately, and so he, having mass, can't stay out of the body. The other thing is when he leaves a large mass, he has a feeling of degradation. So he doesn't think he's anything, so he goes back in his head again. Now, when you have a good command of what a symbol is, and the chasing of symbols, this way, and when you get an understanding of what a Thetan is, and that he is a static, which can place itself or perceive from himself at any point over any set of particles at will and instantaneously, why, we see that we are trying to remove a preclear up the scale from the point of being a mass or a symbol or an answer up toward a point where he is creative, where he can make postulates, and so on. The second that he can do this, he can impose space on terminals, and he can exteriorize very easily. He has no difficulty in retaining his identity, but he has his identity all mixed up with symbols. Now, let's take this thing called a name. An awful lot of preclears are in terrible shape simply because of their name. You take the fellow's name, and you move it around as a symbol in moving postulates, and all of a sudden the case begins to free up. Silly name. There's a case, a notable case, that had been audited by practically every auditor in Greater New York, and was audited by a member of the first unit. And this case's name added up to water. And all this case ever did for an auditor was blow a Greek charge and got no better. This case was being the symbol, being water. And we just dramatize this and continue to dramatize this and continue to dramatize it until all of a sudden the auditor would say, well, we blew that big, beautiful grief charge, and so the case would be better, but the case was no better. So this became an enormous mystery. So a thetan becomes something and sells himself on the idea he is it, merely because he's so exhausted in this combat with symbols, freedoms, ethics, ideals, evils, these things become symbols, and he avoids them one way or the other, and then he doesn't know what to avoid because they're mobile, and he never knows where they turn up or anything else. His identity is something that is quite treacherous. Identity is a very treacherous thing. It turns up in police stations. Most of the boys you are having trouble exteriorizing, by the way, have a record a light year long. That's right. They have a record a light year long. That doesn't mean they're criminal on earth or in this lifetime. But they've had their days. Put them on an e-meter, and you keep knocking it off the pin. They're wanted in this galaxy and that galaxy. That sounds like just space opera, but it happens to be very true. Now, they are dodging. They're dodging the symbol called law and order. Well, can't they create law and order? Well, they sure can. But what are they dodging law and order for? Well, that's because they know they have an identity. But do they? An identity is forced upon one until he believes he will desire it. He begins to resist an identity until he is an identity. The one thing I can tell you in common, every thetan has in common, is a terrible background of resistance to bodies. Oh, but thoroughly. The last thing in the world a thetan would be a body. So here you are. That's a resistance to a symbol. In essence, because that symbol is an identity. And as an identity, it fixes the individual instead of him fixing it. Now, we have a problem with any symbol. Is the individual fixing the symbol, or is the symbol fixing him? And the way you keep symbols from fixing the individual that are pinning him down is very easy. You just mock it up and move it around until he realizes he's moving it. It's not moving him. You let him find it, in other words. It's an end-of-cycle processing to mock up symbols. Sure, because he's been looking for a symbol. All right, have him mock up a symbol called freedom. Whole populaces have gone to their death. Whole civilizations have been destroyed simply by people looking for freedom. The greatest slaveries ever established on earth were established in the name of freedom. Why? Because everybody was trying to close terminals and locate it and find it and so forth. And they were trying to find freedom by avoiding slavery. So they closed terminals with slavery, and there they were. Freedom was the opposite to slavery, so they had to fight slavery in order to have freedom, and that made slaves out of them. This is the most elementary of problems. It is not even difficult. But it lies in this exact field. A thetan conceives that he has mass, if he conceives that he is a symbol. If he is an identity, why then he feels he has mass, so he becomes, to that degree, hard to exteriorize. A are several ways to solve this. He believes his entire beingness depends on his having a name. If that's what his entire beingness depends upon, why, good heavens, of course, then he's going to be nailed down. How else could he be nailed down? But by resisting a symbol, a name. He didn't want a name at first. That's why he thinks he has to have one. And we get this, what you resist, you become. An individual resists having an identity and eventually becomes an identity. Well, then this is the problem in exteriorization. And it's that intimate. Anybody who's difficult to exteriorize, who simply three feet back of your head, you're not 3 feet back of your head, is a symbol. He's not a being without mass. And there are many symbols which are greater than he. One of the ways of doing it is simply, let's take a look over the numbers of symbols which are greater than himself in terms of an e-meter. Just ask him that on the eight dynamics. What symbols, what words are bigger than you are? You get the most interesting responses on a needle. Then you simply have him walk these up and move them through space from point to point, back and forth, up, down, around, until he's moving them. They're not moving him. He says, well, I'm not. I'm bigger than that. And the next thing you know, you say 3 feet back of your head, and he is. Your problem of exteriorization then departs from an understanding of this, that a thetan in a creative state does not himself have mass, and an understanding of how he gets mass. He gets mass by becoming himself a symbol. Of course, the last thing in the world he is a symbol. It's like a fellow who makes drums all his life and eventually sits down in the corner, curled up like a drum, and expects somebody to beat him. This fellow hates drums, so he becomes a drummer. See that? Now, why is this? Well, why does a fellow become what he resists? Well, he just sweeps down on it in this fashion. He starts fighting it with energy. And he gets more loses than he gets wins. And so he gets to be it. Now let's get that much more simply. Let's get the problem of the stuck flow. The fellow talks in one direction too long, he'll get a stuck flow. Now the way you unstick this flow is to reverse it or get some mock-ups and get it budged out of line, get it squared around. And knock it off. Well, now when he starts resisting something, very arduously starts resisting something, you know, crush, crush, crunch, crunch, he gets a stuck flow. Similarly, when he starts giving postulates towards something, in other words, commands or orders in one direction, and it never gives any back, he gets on a stuck flow. He eventually gets to the point where he can't force anything along that line, and the line itself will collapse. And that is the end product of a stuck flow. It collapses into a mass. All communication lines eventually wind up to be one terminal, both ends. Anytime they stick too hard on a flow, they'll eventually do that. So your thetan stood outside the body for a long time, giving it orders, telling it to destroy itself or something. Eventually, the very mass of material which he put out in one direction became a stuck flow, and we got a collapsed terminal proposition. Now, what's a collapsed terminal? It's something that should have two ends, which now has both ends in coincidence. Both ends the same place. Now, that's a collapsed terminal. You're going to hear this phrase an awful lot, collapsed terminal. Better get used to it. You'll notice many pre-clears have collapsed terminals. Well, right next door to a collapsed terminal is becoming the thing you're collapsed with. You're right there, so you must be it. That's the immediate assumption. Now, thought is very agile. But when it gets fixed in the terms of a symbol, it becomes much less agile. It loses its creativeness. Let's take the plight of the writer who writes Western stories. He will eventually start wearing Western clothes, even though he lives in the middle of Brooklyn. It's inevitable. He becomes the mass of symbols which he puts out. a method of whipping this for a writer. A method of whipping this is very simple. Write in that many lines that you can embrace. Never bother about names, identities, things like that. Sign yourself Henry Pillbaum. And I used to write Western stories many, many, many years ago. And my name was W.R. Colt. You'll still find me in the library. And the funny part of it was, is all the time I was writing Western stories, I was really interested in yachting. Never had anything much to do with the West. And as a matter of fact, tried not to close terminals with it because of my early boyhood misadventures with Mustangs, which I do not consider very romantic. They are very bad transportation, but they work if you hit them hard enough in the head with a leaded quirt. SPCA and I have never seen eye to eye on the subject of horses, which would buck you off and tromp on you. When I was six, by the way, I remembered this the other day when I was talking about this down to Congress. I didn't tell it. Oh, God, I had an argument with the SPCA when I was six. I had managed to bring to curb by running him into a brick wall a 1,200-pound Kentucky saddler that somebody had foisted off as a riding horse. And I couldn't stop him. And he was going places, and he wasn't bright enough to climb the wall or do anything imaginative like that, so he merely ran into it. And of course, he fell down, so I sat down on him, waiting for him to more or less come to and shake himself out of it. And this lady came up, and lo and behold, it was the SPCA, because this happened within a half a block of the capital of Helena, Montana. And they had quarters right in that vicinity in those days. And she started to sound off about cruelty to horses. And I don't know where she got off bawling out a six-year-old boy who had just almost lost to a 1,200-pound horse. But we had quite an argument, which almost put me in police court, which was to the effect, I said, rather profanely, that she ought to engage herself in forming a society for the prevention of cruelty to children by horses. And she belonged to the wrong gang. Didn't appreciate this. She went and told some of my relatives. They, of course, told me off. She's a very influential person, I think. Her husband was the treasurer of the state of Montana or something, you know. I mean, influential, had money. Had the state's money anyway. Now, when it comes to any of your stuck flows, what happens? What happens on the management of a horse? You just manage enough horses and you lose a few times. You've got a continuous flow of commands going to this horse and going to this horse. And you just go down to Virginia sometime and find out what happened to some of those fine old families. You go in and knock on the door and they say, So, here you have a problem. You have a problem in symbols. The horse is a fixed idea. He doesn't want to do what you want to do. That's his one fixed idea. So you fix a lot of ideas into it that he does want to do it. You fix them in various ways. With sugar, with leaded quirts, with spurs, with petting. It's all done, and nearly every writer does it with all those. Unless, of course, he's smart enough to simply be the horse. Because that's where he'll wind up anyhow. So the problem is, however, if you're unwilling to be a horse and insist on using a horse, then you, of course, will become the horse against your wishes on an inversion, which makes you a compulsive symbol. You know, you're compelled to be a symbol. That individual who can fluidly be something and then be something else there's a very dangerous fellow indeed. He's not fighting. That's not fair. He's happy, though. So anyway, as a writer, I used to solve this rather uniformly. I wrote stories in rotation. I would write a Western story, and then a sea story, and I'd write a detective story, and then I'd write a flying story, and then I would write an article for somebody or other, and then I would write something for one of the super slicks, which, by the way, paid me much less than the cheapest pulp. Yes, I wrote in one time to the American Mercury and asked them why didn't they bring their rates up to what they were, a pulp paper, because they were published on pulp. And shortly afterwards, after I'd gotten busy on this and made jokes out of it, talked in front of the American Picture Guild on the subject of the pulps and kept describing articles in the Mercury and so on, why they began to frown on this sort of thing, and my name became non persona grata with them, so I had to sell them under two other names. Now, as long as one was willing to do that, that was fine. That was just beautiful. But then one day, why, you up and you write yourself something, and you're silly enough to use your own name on it. And you get fixed with an identity of having done something. So there you are. And actually, anybody's career, whether as a writer or as a homo sapiens or a streetcar conductor or any other darn thing, winds up the same way. He starts out playing a game of streetcar conductor, then he knows he doesn't want to be the streetcar conductor, he resists being the streetcar conductor, and then he becomes the streetcar conductor, a symbol. So you only become a symbol by resisting something. Being something is quite something else than being a symbol. You understand that? You can be a man, you can be John Jones. But if you can be John Jones, then you want to be free to unbe John Jones. And the freedom of beingness should be equaled in every case by the freedom of unbeingness. And if you can parallel your freedoms so that you have the freedom to be and the freedom to unbe, as well as the freedom not to be, why, of course, you exteriorize beautifully and you're very happy and all things work out wonderfully. And also all the problems of auditing are solved for the auditor before he gets there. But when the auditor gets there, if he takes what we've been talking about this morning and uses this, why, he'll find out that he finds processing very simple. Because obviously the fellow who's sitting there in front of him, pre-clear, is being John Jones, a body. Earth, Galaxy 61, 1954. There he is. The fellow isn't happy or he wouldn't be there. Well, what's he unhappy about? Well, he must be unhappy about being a symbol. Well, let's take the biggest symbol that he is and let's have him be it. And then unbe it. And then be it and then unbe it on some sort of a gradient scale which will eventually rescue to the individual his freedom to be or not to be no longer a question. And that, in essence, is your highest echelon of processing. You can develop any God's quantity of techniques out of that. The only thing else you'd need to know about that would be a little bit more about the theory of communication. Because communication, cause and effect, and duplication are all tied in very tightly. We've covered enough for one morning. It's not a very big subject. I mean, the subject of communication is idiotically simple. The trouble with it. It's so simple that everybody misses it. Well, it's like this business of symbols. Now, you use that definition for a symbol, and you'll win. It isn't whether or not that definition is good in the field of English, or in the field of medicine, or in the field of writing. We're not interested in whether or not this is true, or all we're interested in is does it serve our purposes in Scientology? And to that limited degree, it serves our purposes admirably. We, during the whole first book, spent all of our time chasing the symbol known as an engram, which is to say, an idea or a series of ideas known as perceptions fixed in a mass which was mobile. And we were trying to solve this mass of energy which had these fixed ideas in it. Because this mass of energy with its fixed ideas in it was bigger than the pre-clear. and so could victimize him and make him sick. Well, we had means of eradicating it one way or the other with greater or lesser success. And so as we could knock out that mass called a symbol, we could make our individual relatively well as a Homo sapiens. We were still processing the bigger symbol. See, we were processing minor symbols to alleviate a bigger symbol, a body. Now, do your techniques sort of fit on the gradient scale of what we've been going into? Well, all right. We have then, in all the processing we're doing, the problem of identification and differentiation, as we always have had. But we can sum that up now in terms of communication. We can sum it up in numerous ways. But the simplest statement that we can make of any of this is the right to be and the right to unbe. And if a person has thought being something for a long time, then he is it compulsively. He has no more determinism about it. But if he simply merely became it, you know, he just decided he'd become that, and then he decided he done become it. Nothing is simpler. No Phaeton ever snapped into a body unless he laid his hand on it in anger. You just don't walk up to a body and put a beam on him and snap in. You don't even walk up to a body and put a beam on it and have it be hurt badly and snap in. You have to walk up to the body with the intention of anger in order to snap into one suddenly and inexplicably. You have to have conceived that bodies are evil and therefore something to be resisted in order to be trapped in one. You have to conceive that theta traps are very bad in order to get trapped in a theta trap. It's almost impossible for a theta to get trapped. But there's the one modus operandi of his getting trapped. Being afraid of getting trapped, of course. And he postulates that he's afraid of getting trapped in order to set an example so other Thetans will be afraid of getting trapped, and they will get trapped. So he does too. Fellows go down to the Gold Coast and the Ivory Coast and the slave coast of Africa and spread Christianity in order to buy slaves. Boy, they got to be the most psalm-singing, praying people you ever heard of. And Christianity, at the time they were using it, was no more than a tool, an effort to get some slaves trapped. You know, make the tribes docile enough so they wouldn't fight against being bought. And they wound up as devout Christians, people were doing it. Fascinating, isn't it? So that to be caught in a trap, you must have set the trap yourself. So in any case, as you go along and run any case, you want to know what's wrong with the case, you could be very self-righteously accusative of the case and say, when did you do it? Those everybody's mean to me. When were you mean to everybody? Unfortunately, this individual's recall is not adequate to tell you this because it goes over too many millennia. So, processing it a little simpler to you right there? All right. Now, let's just look at what else we were doing there this morning. This condensed scale of energy, it's of lookingness, and when you go into energy, you go down from knowingness into the rest of the band. And that band is knowingness, lookingness, emotingness, effortingness, thinkingness. You know where it goes there? That's right. Thinkingness. Thinking is condenses and becomes a symbol. A symbol is condensed thinking. And you know where it goes then? It goes into eating. It enters the applause scale at that point. And that drops down to eating. And you know what condensed eating is? Sex. So you see what a terrific band of understanding we're looking at here in terms of human experience. It's a big band. Actually, condensed eating is sex. But you go on up there, you go to the applause scale, then you get up into symbolisms, and then you get up into thinkingness, and then you get up into effort. Effort's pretty high. But you get this thing repeating over and over and over, and when it's repeated and repeated and repeated, why, as it goes down scale, why it evidently becomes messed. we cannot justify that in just one, two, three, you know. I mean, we can't say absolutely this is the case. It just happens to be an existing theory. The rest of this is not existing theory. The rest of this, it happens to be a lot closer to fact than the acceleration of gravity is 32.2 feet per second. When we get down to sex, you know, eating this and then sex, and above that, symbols, and above that, thinking and effort and so on, when we're dealing with these things, we're dealing with a fact that is better and more useful than 32.2 feet per second. The definition of a symbol is actually a little more valuable to you than any of the definitions of physics. Because it was in desperation of chasing symbols that man located physics. Well, do you feel better or worse for that little run this morning?
Better.
A little bit better. Well, fine. Now, let's just take 2 seconds here and do the rest of it. Okay, be a body. Be a girl's body. Be a boy's body. Be an old man's body. An old woman's body. A young girl's body. A young boy's body. Be an Eskimo's body. Be a cat's body. Be a horse's body. Be a dog's body. Be a cat's body. Be a stone. Be a body. Be a stone. Be a body. Be a book. Be a body. Be a book. Be a body. Be a book. Be a body. Be the letter Alpha. Be a body. Be freedom from want. Be a body. Be a murderer. Be a victim. Be a murderer. Be a victim. Be a murderer. Be a victim. Be a murderer. Be a policeman. Be a victim. Be a doctor. Be a murderer. Be a policeman. Be a hospital. Be a stone. 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 Be a victim. Be a murderer. Be an electric chair. Have the emotions of an electric chair. Be a victim. Be a murderer. Be a burglar. Be a sidewalk. Be the sky. Be a wood. Be a sky. Be a wood. Be a sky. Have the emotion of the sky. be a wood. Have the emotion of a wood. Be a murderer. Have the emotion of a murderer. Be a victim. Have the somatic of a victim. Have the emotion of the victim. Have the viewpoint of the victim. Have the knowingness of the victim. Be the symbols of the victim. Be the applause of the victim. Be a police officer. Be the police force. Have the viewpoint of the victim. Have the viewpoint of the murderer. Be a duck. Have the emotion of a duck. Have the motion of a duck. Be a duck hunter. Have the emotion of the duck hunter. Have the viewpoint of a duck hunter. Have the lookingness of a duck hunter. Have the knowingness of the duck hunter. Be a duck. Have the emotion of the duck. Have the knowingness of the duck. Have the lookingness of the duck. Have the effort of the duck. Be the duck hunter. Be the gun. Be the pellets. Be the pellets in the duck. Be the duck. Have the emotion of the duck. Be the duck hunter. Have the eatingness of the duck hunter. Be the eatingness of the duck. The eatingness of the duck hunter. The eatingness of the duck. Be the duck eating. Be a fish being eaten by the duck. Be the fish. Swim. Be the motion of the fish. Be the emotion of the fish. Be the motion of the body out on the sidewalk. Be the motion of the body out on the sidewalk. Now be the body. Now be the room. Now be the motion of the body. Now be the motion of the body out on the sidewalk. Now be the corner. Now be the motion of the body walking down to the corner. Okay, be 1,000 feet up. Give me some places where you're not. A place where somebody else isn't. Be yourself. Give me some more places where you're not. Okay. Now give me several things that you can lose. Several things that you can afford to lose. Now check over some things you have not lost. Now some things which you own. Now some things which you know absolutely with certainty that you do not own. Be them. Be them, one right after the other. Okay. Find the two back points of the room. Now sit there for a moment and look and don't think. Now look through whatever you're looking at. Okay. What you got? Okay. Feel better? You're hungry. Put some people in your stomach. Oh, for bad. Now, look, cannibalism, for the duration of this class at least, doesn't go. I fell. Feel the back?
Yeah.
We exteriorized on that one. Anybody exteriorized on that for the first time? A little patty cake way of exteriorization. Did you?
I don't know.
He doesn't know. We have to solve on some of these cases degradation because of exteriorization before that exteriorized. Because most of the people here who aren't exteriorized right now have at one time or the other, and then they're very degraded for having done so. And that's what you have to solve the case. Well, that's beside the point. SOPHC is still very much in order, just as it rolls. Pearl, be your lungs. Be your body. Be your lungs. Be your body. Be somebody else's lungs. Pearl, is that what you did? Did you do that?
No, I didn't hold that
off. Yellow bag? Yes, well, you need a lung again. All right, both you and Pearl, and you, be somebody else's lungs now. Be somebody else's lungs. Now be somebody else's lungs, and be those lungs with TD. Now add lung fever. Now wheeze and pant and can't get air. As the lungs. Now get a gleeful feeling of actually lousing him up. Just get what you're doing to this person with your TV and so forth. Just fix him up, but
good.
Now be the person. Now be the lungs. Now be your lungs. Now be the effort of your lungs.
Okay. You still holding back a cough? You still afraid to go to the doctor? All right. Okay. That better? Well, I hope you feel better, but the practical truth of the matter is, you characters, I didn't process you this morning to make you feel better. I tried to give you the opening done on randomity and on anticipation, beingness and resistance. All right.